Now we have another presentation about Oceania. And I would like to introduce me to Manuel. He comes from France and he lives there for a couple of years. And want to talk about
very good, very good. I suppose you can all hear me. So as Adriana said, my name is Jean-Manuel Trémont. Adriana asked me to come from France to speak about Denmark, or more precisely about that large squatters commune called Christiania. One of the reasons why she asked me to do that is I made a book. Unfortunately, so far it's only in French, but I'm sure you all read perfect French. It's called Récit de Christiania. And it tells you about what the place is. I don't exactly know what I could compare it to in New York, but imagine an enormous army barracks in the center of town that would be empty from the army, and 2 years later, squatted, I think it's the right term, occupied, by 1,000 hippies, anarchists, drug pushers, never do wells, tramps, all the filth and the scum of the city. This happened in 1969 that the army left that place. Alors, it is really, really big. On the back of my book, I have the reproduction of a map of Copenhagen with the royal palace, with the headquarters of the police, with the house of the prime minister, and all that you see in red, that's a bit more than a mile long, that is that place. What happened was that between 1969 and 1971, kids of the area around it was called Christianshavn, which in Danish means the harbor of Christian. Christian was a big king of the Danes. The kids, small kids, wanted to explore because it was such a huge place with trees all over the place and a lake and plenty of things which were abandoned that they could break and steal. So of course they loved it. Then they reported back to their parents and grown-ups, and as there was a severe real estate crisis in those days, and there were plenty of people occupying houses, they started to think, maybe we should give it a go. And in the summer of 1971, several grown-ups started to get in. They were wowed with the beauty of the place and the size of the place. And then in an alternative newspaper of the time called Hovedbladet, which means the magazine of the head, a guy called Jakob Ludvigsen said, emigrate with bus number 8, because bus number 8 took you there. It was very difficult at first because in 2 years, in fact, grown-ups had come. There were all the plumbers and electricians and all the handworkers of Copenhagen who had come to steal the stuff that the army had left. So when the first occupiers came, they had indeed those beautiful, huge buildings, but all the plumbing was gone, all the windows were gone, all the doors were gone, and all the electrical wiring was gone. So you had all those young, cuddled hippies who had spent nice times with their families, who suddenly had to start building up from scratch. So this is why in the beginning you didn't have that many people. But that was good, because that meant that the place was under the radar of police attention. And by the spring of 1972, suddenly, boom, it exploded, and you got about 1,000 people who lived in there. Then, of course, if I may say so, the shit hit the fan. The police and the government realized that, here was something they had not planned upon. And Christiania started to do something that they are going to do constantly all along their history, which they continue to do. They had two tactics to resist the onslaught of police and government. First tactic was to always speak with the government, always be welcoming, say, yes, we'll negotiate with you, yes, we'll sit down at the table. And the government says, okay, we wait for you on Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Ministry of Social Affairs, Defense, whatever. The guys come, they talk with the government, and at the end of the talk, they say, but you know, you understand, we are a completely self-governing place, we have no authority. We are just mandated by our friends, and we don't decide, and we have listened to what you said. We want to report to the general community. And that is a tactic that they have used now for the last 36 years. Of course, the government got wise to it. We can speak about it a bit later, but it still works. The second tactic was very intelligent. The place is, again, extremely beautiful. It's extremely large, and it has beautiful nature areas. It has a beautiful lake, plenty of trees, and small houses dotted all over the thing. In other words, it's an ideal park in which to have a walk. And the Christianists, therefore, smartly, have always left the place completely open for anybody who would want to walk. And they said, we are actually fulfilling a very important civic function because we are maintaining this park alive and it's free of charge. Everybody can come and enjoy it. Third technique, probably the most effective, fun, stories, and seduction. They have always thought that merely finger wagging, saying we are the righteous ones, we know how to live, we're going to show you, was not a very good tactic. But a much better tactic is to seduce people. And here I would like to start with a story which some of you may have heard before. Adriana apparently knew it before. That happened in 1973. You have to understand that in Denmark, Christmas is a religion. First because, you know, the Viking stuff. The Scandinavia got Christianized very late. And all the old paganism of Scandinavia survived in Christmas. And when Christmas happened in Scandinavia, you don't have all the Jesus bullshit. What you have is the little red gnomes and hobgoblins bullshit. It's still religious bullshit, but it's very religious bullshit, not Christian bullshit. And it's a pain in the neck, especially if you're a foreigner, because for a month before Christmas, they start doing what they call Christmas lunches, where all different groups in society gather, get drunk, eat loads of food, and everybody is supposed to be all nicey and lovey-dovey. So a few of them think, and one day, puff, the idea is born. Let's take Christmas literally. Lovey-dovey, exchanging, giving gifts. Hey, that's what we are all about. So we decided to do a whole long street theater operation, and I'm going to describe to you exactly how the people of Copenhagen heard and saw it. It starts about a month before, black chopper in the sky, landing on a big barren field. Three very bourgeois men in, you know, coats, really bourgeois people with jackets and tie, and from boat, all this film, not by Adriana, but somebody like you. And then out of the helicopter, two angels, who come and who say, hey, we want to show you what Christmas really is. We have asked the Santa Claus army to come. Oh, interesting. Cut. Opening the scene again, the harbor. And the ferry boat from Sweden, the large ferry boat from Sweden, docks. You've got, you know, the big belly that opens, creak, and out of the big belly, creak, you get first the Christmas goose. Now, you Americans, you've got the Thanksgiving turkey, all right? Well, they've got the Christmas goose. Now, here came this gigantic goose, you know, papier-mâché, living theater, puppet style of thing, 10, 12 meters. Then the goose goes, and out comes about 150, again, hippies, freaks, never-do-wells, all dressed in commercial Santa Claus's costumes, and all marching, we are the Santa Claus, we are, wonderful stuff, distributing chocolates and candy, etc. Now, at first, the trick was to be nice. So they go, for example, to what is called the Den Gamlesby, which means the town of the old, which was an enormous retirement home. So they come there, they're nice with the old guys. And then they do things that start to be a bit stranger. They go, for example, into several building sites. And hey, it's Christmas, so everybody should help one another. So they go to the nice, you know, African guy or Arabic guy who's paid nothing to go with his sledgehammer. They take the sledgehammer from him. All very nice and sweet. It gets even worse when they go into a factory, a Ford factory, by the way, and they start saying to the workers, it's Christmas. Stop working. have fun. And then, of course, the hierarchy at the factory goes crazy, and there was especially a guy who threatened with dousing them with a water hose. But the boss of the factory came running, "Are you crazy? The machines are still working. You're going to have, you know, electrical, you're going to burn all the machines." Then it got steadily worse. They got to the labor law tribunal. And here a famous Danish writer made a big speech saying that the labor law was completely unfair, and the Santa Claus is, they want the happiness of everyone. So if the labor law is no good, and if the labor law tribunal is no good, let's get done with the labor law tribunal. And here the surprise was this. It came as an enormous, you know, those big trucks with gigantic cranes, really big ones, parking in front of the thing, and the people started to actually destroy the tribunal, physically. They had sledgehammers under their Santa Claus's costumes, picks, shovels, you know, really physically coming with the big, you can imagine the reaction of the police. They were not happy. And then came the most famous bit. And that bit had been very carefully planned, because of course they realized that by that time the police was of course on to the fact that those Santa Clauses were up to no good. So on Christmas Day itself, or the day before Christmas, the last day where the department stores are open, all the members of the Santa Claus army, all dressed nicely in their most bourgeois outfits possible, are into the department stores. And at a given time, they all disappear in the basement, put on their Santa Claus's uniform, whoop, and spread into the department store. And hey, it's Christmas. Madame, it's Christmas. Have a book. Have this. Have that. And of course, the first half hour, nobody understood. Oh, wow. Oh, you're giving me this. Yes, it's Christmas. It's free. Then, of course, the bosses of the department store realized what was happening. And you have to imagine the day before Christmas in this country, which is Christmas mad, you have to imagine the direction of a department store saying,
"The direction would like to inform you that Santa Clauses, which are in the department store, are not acknowledged to belong to our personnel, and you are not to accept any gifts from them. We must inform you that the police shall be..."
And then, of course, they had to call the police in. And this is where the cameras came into play. Because the whole shtick was to have on tape policemen beating Santa Clauses. That was the idea. And that was a fantastic blow, because of course you can imagine all the TVs of Denmark and of Scandinavia, they just gobbled it. You know, Santa Claus being beaten by the big bad police, that was very good. And the laughter was such that that put definitely Christiania on the map in Scandinavia. Then they realized that they were on to a good thing, and they started to do plenty of things, which always were a kind of interface between Christiania and the community. Sometimes it was very stupid, especially once where they had a few guys who were good friends with the Hells Angels. So they invited all the Hells Angels of Europe to a big meeting in Christiania. That was not the smartest thing they have done. Yet it showed something very interesting, because I don't know how you feel, but me personally, I'm definitely not a physically courageous person. And every time, you know, I know that on a demonstration, you know, you're going to have people beating other people up, you know, police coming, Hells Angels coming. I'm not happy. So Christiania, realizing that, had created something very simple, a telephone chain. Because also they were always afraid that the police might start a big raid, you know, 10,000 police on one day. So the idea was this. Anybody in Christiania who suddenly saw such a big raid would phone two friends, who would phone two friends, who would phone two friends. And there were 30,000 people in on the game. On the second night of the Hells Angels gathering, things had gotten so bad that they decided to launch that telephone chain. One third of all the people who were on the list did come, which quite frankly is quite amazing. And the point was then that they didn't beat anybody. But you know, if you are a big bad Hells Angels, you may be a big bad Hells Angels, but if you are suddenly swamped with 200 people around you, there's a moment in which, you know, you realize, even if you can be the dumbest shit that, okay, violence will get you nowhere because you may hit the five net guys, but then you've got 50 around you and you've got 50 more behind them and you're going to get swamped anyway. So that was a very smart way to non-violently cool down some of the most violent people on earth. So that was also a big success, which went down very well the throats of a great many Scandinavians. Of course, in the meantime, the Scandinavian right wing hated the place, hated its guts, wanted to shut it down. But Christiania has been extremely lucky in this. That Christiania was born in 71, at the time when the wave of, let's say, left-wing power in Europe was at its peak. The welfare state was also at its peak, and there was a fairly strong groundswell of support for left-wing policies. And in Christiania, there were plenty of people. The variety of people was amazing. You had, once again, you had pure dyed-in-the-wool hippies, New Age, crystals, etc. You had a few anarchists. Not that many, but you had a few anarchists. You had more, they call themselves activists, so let's say ultra-wing, ultra-left people. Not necessarily anarchists, but, you know, what we call in France gauchistes, close to us. You had simply people who didn't have a job, didn't have any money, didn't have a place to be, but thought that it was a nice way to survive together. You had all kinds of weirdos, eccentrics, people who knew they would never fit anywhere, but suddenly in this big circus, which Christiania was, they felt very happy and very at ease. And that made for a very varied demographics. And therefore, that also made for this. Plenty of people in Christiania drew money from the Danish welfare. And very early on, Christiania had made a deal with the welfare. Anybody with the address, the official address of Christiania, would receive a lesser amount of money. Let me explain. In Denmark, that land of plenty and honey, what do you get when you're on welfare? You get your rent paid, you get your electricity paid, and you get some money. You got your rent paid, you got, yeah, because of course the right wing came into Denmark and of course they've changed the stuff. But still in those days it was like this. And that's very expensive. That means that for each person you had, they paid, I'll just get you a number out of my head, 3,000 kroners a month. And the deal was this. The deal was to say, since in Christiania we don't pay any rent, you can not give us the rent money. You give us the rest, but you don't give us the rent money. Wow, said the welfare authorities. We like that. You had 700 people who suddenly were not receiving rent money anymore. That was a big chunk of savings. And therefore, the fight has always been the same. On one side, you had the defense ministry, the legal owner of the grounds, because it was an army barracks. On another side, you had the, I don't know how they call it, social welfare, blah, blah, blah. And every time the government said, okay, tomorrow we close Christiania, the welfare guys would raise their hands and say, hey, where do we put 1,000 weirdos? Suddenly, you know, from one day to the next, where do we put them? And suddenly, where do you get the money to pay for their new rent? And that every time, weak, stopped the government dead in its tracks. As you know, government is not one big guy, it's always complicated. So, of course, there has been always fights with the police. Alors, here we tread on perfectly familiar ground. If you have been into any occupied house, you know how it is. The police comes very often. But in Christiania, again, things at first started like everywhere, but then got quickly different. Because Christiania, again, being a child of the hippie period, had something characteristic of the hippie period. Everybody got me? Very good. Everybody smoked. That was very good. People were still thinking that hashish is a revolutionary tool. That was in those days. Ask people with white hair. They'll tell you, yeah, that. This is what they thought. Maybe some people still think it. But at any rate, that was the game. Problem is, there was, in the middle of a large European city, a large physical area where everybody smoked openly in the street. So what happened extremely quickly? People came to Christiania to buy hash, because where else could you buy it without connections? Very simple. You are, you know, you're a 14 years old kid in some stupid suburb out where in Sweden. You don't know anyone. But you know, you just take the train to Copenhagen, you just go to that place, Christiania, and there you've got guys who are going to sell you hashish, no questions asked. Wow! Whoom! Very quickly, there arose in Christiania a place called Strassen. Now, Strassen, you immediately hear it's a German. Strassen. Because it was full of hash pushers, and hash pushers, of course, are guys who are sometimes very nice people, and sometimes they just, a fairly criminal bunch. And, of course, they were getting their hash wholesale from, definitely, part criminals, part simply entrepreneurs. Who went on their own in Morocco. Alors, again, in my book, I was very lucky in Goa, in India. I once met a big pusher from Christiania. He recognized me, I recognized him. Oh, wow, yeah. And he was stoned, he was happy. And I interviewed him for 5 hours on how do you become a big drug pusher. And you've got the results here. So eventually, if you're interested in changing careers, you can know how to become a big drug pusher. At any rate, the problem was this. These guys, so by their, let's say, contamination with the criminal element, introduced a high element of physical violence and intimidation. Clearly, you had a district of Christiania, a street where you had about 150, mostly men, a few women, but mostly men, leather jackets, it was a uniform, blue jeans, leather jacket, Palestinian keffiyeh, wallet with a chain, no, that came from later, never done it myself, and the little Swiss scale, and hash in the pocket, and you came to them, you said, I would like 12 grams. They would take their finger with their teeth, take a chunk, and it was amazing. Usually they always got it right. 12 grams, bingo. Of course, the other Christianites, Percy, didn't see anything wrong with that because we were all in favor of legalizing hash. Problem is that, of course, these brought unwanted police attention. Because that was really very provocative in the eyes of the police. But the police got really vicious. Because the police, amazingly, got smart. They thought this. Okay, now we have these guys doing something really stupid, and which the general public does not like. So let's do this. All the heroin people, all the junkies, let's grab them out of their natural environment in Copenhagen, and let's put them in Christiania. Now, this is something historically documented. They grabbed junkies, put them in a police car, drove the police car to Christiania and said, look, guy, you've got a choice. We see you again in the street outside Christiania. You go in the slammer. You go into Christiania. That's it. Of course, you're a junkie. What do you do? Thank you. Whoops. And you settle in Christiania. And the problem quickly got out of hand. Because you can be a community of 1,000 people surviving with difficulty with 150 hash dealers. But if you have 300 junkies in your midst, forget it. There's no more antisocial person than a junkie. I mean, it's just impossible to run a community with that many junkies. It just doesn't work. And the problem really got bad. Now, me personally, I first discovered it when I was, by the way, it's funny because I can't still decide whether I was 15 or 16, and I should know. But at any rate, I discovered it at a very tender age, of course, because I was in Copenhagen, and people told me, there's one place you mustn't go to. It's full of rockers and hash dealers and junkies. Please don't go. Of course. The next hour. Logical. So I go there, and I fell in love with the place. Of course, again, you know, you're a teenager. You see people who are dressed in a dirty way. So to you, that means freedom. So, wow, you go in there. And I personally have this memory of there were plenty of cafes in the place, very interesting cafes. But their people were shooting in front of everyone. It was really disgusting. They would take their syringes and that was a little bit too much. 1976, they try a first thing, very naively, and in fact at the behest of a Christian guy who had infiltrated the place. They say, okay, we're going to take them to a warm country. Because if they go to a warm country, they'll be happy, and if they are happy, they'll forget about the need about taking drugs. You know, very naive people. But it's understandable, they were Danes, and for Danes, warm countries, it's really something different. The sun is very, very important for those people. So here they went, and you know where they took them? Egypt. Of course, everybody knows, no drugs in Egypt. No hash, no opium, no nothing. You can imagine what happened. 60 junkies in Egypt, blonde, tall junkies, many of them women. With the therapy people, half of them women. It was a rush of everybody who sold whatever kind of drugs all over Cairo, then all over Luxor. They never had it so good business-wise. So, of course, that Egypt trip was an utter failure. So they come back really unhappy, and things got steadily worse and worse because the police understood that now they had something. Because now what happened, the normal people who had loved to go and take a stroll in Christiania, they went to Christiania, and when you see junkies, forget it. You don't like going into a place where you have junkies. And then they did something quite amazing, and which I think that as anarchists, we have to think about, because it was very, very, very interesting, because here I saw anarchy confronted to a real, clear problem. Our generation has not known, you know, Spain or in 1930s, 1960s, does not know Macno, but Christiania on a much smaller scale had a very serious problem because they said, what do we do? Can we, let's say cure 300 junkies? They quickly agreed, forget it. Already the idea of curing junkies is already difficult enough and we can't do it, period. So once it was clear that we could not do it, they had to decide, then what do we do? And for one agonizing month, there was a gigantic, how they call it, Höring, which means hearing, a big, permanent general assembly, 1 month, where they argued the pros and cons, and where they finally came to the decision, we shall prohibit hard drugs. Alors, let's be clear about one thing. Christiania was not founded by anarchists explicitly. There always have been plenty of anarchists in Christiania, and clearly the values and the functioning of Christiania has always been an anarchistic functioning. No bosses, no hierarchies, everything decided collectively, all mandates permanently revocable at a moment's notice. Still, prohibiting, that was tough, because prohibiting hard drugs is not like a few other prohibitions we had done before. For example, in 1973, tired of the masses of young hippies and freaks from all over Europe who came and planted a tent on Christiania and, I'm sorry to say so, shat all over the place. You know, two or three guys shitting all over the place is one thing. 3,000 tourists shitting all over the place is a very different ballgame. So they had decided, okay, no more camping in Christiania. We just don't have the environmental facilities for it. But that was another ballgame, because the people were living in Christiania, and if you prohibited them their hard drugs, that clearly meant you prohibited them to stay in Christiania, because it was obvious that most of them would not stay in Christiania, they would want to get their hard drugs. So that was already a decision hard enough to take. What was harder was to implement it. Because try to think of yourselves, all of you. Try to imagine that suddenly you live into such a community. And then the decision has been taken, okay, no more hard drugs. And you know you have your 1,000 people and you have 300 people taking hard drugs. What is that going to mean? That means that the guy who lives next floor to you, you are going to have to come 20 people one morning to his place and tell him, guy, you've got 1 hour to pack your things and go. Unless you agree to not to take hard drugs anymore, but then you have to go with such and such guy, and you know that in fact 99% of the cases that you're actually throwing people out. That was very, very, very hard, emotionally, politically, and physically. It wasn't so hard on the level of fighting with the junkies, because junkies are junkies. What is important to them is my next fix in 2 hours. So putting up a fight with, 50 people in front of you, they never did it. They just ran away because they wanted their fix. What was difficult was, of course, the guys behind. The big, bad mafia guys who were not happy. And then, again, the problem was those guys had guns. And, of course, in Christiania, nobody had a gun. So, again, the only technique was numbers. And, again, the problem was to combat your fear. Because if you suddenly, one morning, you are only 15, and you've got 3 guys whom you know are dangerous criminals full of guns all over the place, you're not too happy. Now, personally, I didn't live through that. I came exactly at the aftermath. I didn't know it was going on. And I arrived about 1 week after it was over. And they had rested for a week because it had been such a traumatic event. And then they had decided to clean up. I've noticed that American cities are not exactly Switzerland, to put it mildly. So you're quite familiar, I suppose, with urban sleaze, but I was not. When you enter a room where you have, let's say, 100 milk cartons, full of piss. Yeah, because junkies, they don't care about nice things such as plumbing. So when they want to piss, they piss where they can. So if they buy milk cartons, smart idea, let's piss into the milk carton. But the idea of eventually taking the milk carton down and emptying it somewhere doesn't cross their mind. So 150 milk cartons full of piss. Hundreds of syringes. Human shit all over the place. Human shit. Really, all over the place. And all kind of... And we spent... Here I say we because I was part of the thing. We spent a month carting physically the shit out of the different places in which we live. Frankly, it was quite something. At the same time, we decided that since we were, on the go, we might as well clean the whole place. Now, that was a bit more fun, and we had a little tractor on which we had a bulldozer teeth, and I loved that. I had never been on a tractor before. That was fun. But it was very, very hard work, and then we breathed. Still, it has left a big scar on Christiania, but it meant survival. Because also this, of course, went into the media, and even though, of course, the media distorted the things madly, still they had to say that Christiania had won the battle. By the way, about media, I would like to say this, but probably many of you know it, but personally I had a really fascinating personal experience. After that, I settled in Christiania, and I lived 4 years in there. And quickly, I decided that I wanted to be useful in some way, but I'm not the practical kind of guy. I don't know how to use my hands for anything. So I decided, okay, what can I do? I can deal with the press. All right. So we had made a contract where we were getting all the press cuttings of all the press in Europe about Christiania. Once again, I've told you, we were about 1,000 people. We had, after we threw the junkies out, about 150 drug dealers, but drug dealers selling only hashish. And the drug dealers selling hashish were agreeing on the prohibition of junk, and they were usually the first guys to run junkies out of the place if junkies came to get mistakenly the hard drugs, mistakenly believing we still had some. And one day, I get a friend who comes to me saying, there's a French journalist, you're French, do you want to deal with him? I said, all right. Of course, the guy came from a disgusting right-wing daily called Le Figaro. Le Figaro is the Fox News of the print press. Shit people. But I thought, what do I do? If I tell him to scram, he's going to write 100% bullshit. If I deal with him, maybe he'll write nearly 80% bullshit. So I said, all right. I took the guy around for 3 days all around Christiania. I showed him everything. I showed him the hash pushers. I showed him the work collectives. I showed him the health clinic. I showed him the kindergarten. I showed him the school. I showed him everything. And these were the days when punks started to appear. And there were two punks in Christiania who, by the way, were lovers. And they had started a printing plant, a very good printing plant, very technical. Well, they had made the money selling hash. Let's pass. The money was well used. But it was called, it was very obvious, it was called Sativa Print, you know. Fairly blunt, you know. So these guys make their wonderful printing press. You know, you all know that printing, for example, anarchistic stuff and Christian stuff, etc. And he takes pictures of them because, you know, the Mohawk thing was not yet very common. All right. 1 month later, I read the article the guy had made. 3,000 junk dealers in Christiania. Junk, hard work. 3,000. Ah. And there are more people in Christiania. Already, we're talking about 1,000 people. Huh? So, and what are the other people living from? From the money made by the junk dealers, whom the junk dealers give to all the other guys. Alors, the day you meet a guy who deals in hard drugs and who subsidizes freaks and anarchists, hey, call me. That's going to be real news. Then we can call Fox News and say, hey, look. This took my breath away. And again, for 2 years, I received the press cuttings. And the outrageousness of the lies printed really, really amazed me. You know, for a while, often, sometimes we think that maybe we exaggerate in the fact that we say that the media always lies. No. The media does lie. Of course, you Americans know it with Fox News, but really, I had this experience. At any rate, they managed to survive in this way, and it got worse and worse for the state, because the longer the people in Christiania stay, the more difficult it becomes to throw them out, because, of course, they started to have children, about 60. So again, how do you throw out a mother with 3 children, etc.? They then proceeded to do a great many very interesting things. Christiania is very difficult to define, and actually, Adriana, you did pretty well by calling it a self-governing neighborhood. The exact word they use for themselves is a Danish word, which you don't have the equivalent of in English, not exactly. It's called Fristad. Fristad, free town. And a Fristad is actually something historical. It was those medieval communes who were independent from the rules of the feudal lords. So it's fairly intelligent, because here was a place that declared itself somewhat independent from whatever was outside. So that means it was not a big, huge commune, as many people imagine what a commune should be. Everybody wakes up at the same hour, everybody goes to bed at the same hour, everybody eats together. Yeah. You had collectives in it where people ate together. You had collectives where people worked together. You had very loose collectives where merely people inhabited the same house. And you also had hundreds of people living their own individual life and eventually taking part in the collectives at work. Now, me, for example, that was what I did. I lived in... Alors, voilà. I lived in this house. Scandinavia, they have plenty of old gypsy wagons. You were in America, you know that, you have your trailer parks. But in Europe, it's not so common. And there were about 100 such. And by the way, this is a very interesting ambiguity. Christiania is a large place, but it's full. And it's been full since 1972. Plenty of people want to settle in Christiania, but Christiania is full. So, the official idea is this. Officially, you go to your district meeting. Christiania has divided itself in the general meeting, which is supposed to be the main authority on the place, the general meeting. All Christianit can go. Everybody has not a vote, but a voice. There's no votes in Christiania. So it's a voice. It's decisions by consensus. But that is for the big things for all of Christiania. Nobody wants to convene general meetings, you know, just for the fun of it because it's boring, it's complicated. How can you decide stuff when you are 700 people and you only had 700 people for the big meeting about the junk? So you avoid the general meetings. Where things usually get really decided is in the district meeting. Christiania has been divided in 10, 7, 8, 9, whatever district. It has changed. And here it's much easier because you are 150, 170, 40 people. Then you can take more or less a decision. So the idea is you go to your district meeting and say, hello, I would like to have a place when the place gets free. They put you down on the list. When your turn comes, you get the place. My ass. 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. Here, for example, oh boy, Adriana, do I have to confess in public? She doesn't know. She doesn't know. All right, I will confess in public. One thing people had gotten to agree about was that you didn't sell the apartments you lived in. That's logical. That's an occupied place. First of all, you don't have, of course, a legal title of propriety. And anyway, it goes completely against the principle of the whole idea. However, you had the trailers. The trailers, all of them had been bought from outside. So it had been decided with a bad conscience that you could sell the trailers. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm very sorry. I bought one. Yes, shame on me. Yeah, but I was 19. I didn't have a place to go, and I was scared. What am I going to do?
Okay.
I knew. Collective therapy. Nothing better than that. Thank you very much. So I bought that little trailer, and I must say it was amusing. I saw the poster advertising it. Oh! I jumped on my back. I went to the guy and said, I'm buying. The guy said, cool down. I just pinned it half an hour ago. I said, no, you did not. I had the poster in my hand. I said, bingo, I'm buying. So I bought the thing, and I was very happy into it. One reason I bought it was this. My first place in Christiania, I had gotten it. Maybe it's interesting. You'll tell me if you find it boring. The very first time I came, when I was 15 or 16, I just didn't know where to go. I was 15, so gay people liked me. So I must say that, it was nice, and I discovered another angle on life. And that helped me finding my first beds in Christiania. When I started to come to settle down, I knew a guy who, by the way, will be thrown out of Christiania years later for having punched a woman in the nose and having broken her nose. And he started the carnival in Copenhagen. There's a big carnival in Copenhagen, so he started it. And at the time, he wanted to get a place which was a hen house. I really mean it, a hen house. You know, it's chicken. And the problem was that hen house, which of course was not originally a hen house, belonged to Turkish immigrants. And he wanted me to take the hen house. And I had nowhere to go. And I was feeling real shit. I mean, I'm taking this from, you know, immigrants. What am I doing? But at the same time, there was only hens. And I needed a place, so we threw the hens out. We didn't stew them. You know, we gave them back to the Turkish guys. And I stayed in there. But a hen house is not exactly fun. So after 6 months, I got that little trailer. And that shows you the difficulty. It is very difficult to get now into Christiania because it is full. And what they usually say is, well, you want to occupy your stuff, you go and occupy something else somewhere. By the way, yeah, it's not there. There was actually another... Voilà. There was a good idea, however. They had planned this. If the police throws us out, we'll all buy trailers and we'll make a nomadic Christiania. And by the way, this is exactly what happened in England. You know, with Thatcher, who threw all the young unemployed guys and women out of cities. Well, they started what's called the travelers, where you have those convoys. You know about that? No? Bloody hell. Alors, this started in the 80s because of the policies of the Thatcher government. Alors, here I'm talking about tens of thousands of young people. No jobs, no housing. You know the story, no nothing. So what do? They buy huge old buses or old trucks, convert them into houses, and move in convoys. The idea of moving in convoys is that England is a fairly violent place. So in order to fight against the skinheads, in order to fight against the police, in order to fight against, you know, whatever, they do that. Alors, the one thing they did is that they have a fondness for raves, which was not a very smart idea, because you can be, you know, eventually a farmer happy to have 200 young people getting into your field. But if they start making a rave for 3 days, your sense of hospitality is not going to be much improved by that. So the travelers is a big thing in England, and they spread to Europe because they were slowly thrown out of England. So Christiania, anyway, thought about that idea first of making a nomadic Christiania. It never happened because, again, they managed to always fool the government into believing that the negotiations would go on. Sometimes they played the election game, but they played it very smartly. Once they put a candidate on the parliamentary election, and the woman who got elected did something amazing. You see, the Danish parliament, which, like all parliaments, is a very serious place, but she was a young woman. And as happens to a great many young women, she got pregnant, so she had a baby, and she breastfed him. Well, one day, she comes to parliament with her baby in the parliament, and the speaker said, well, now we are now going to study the bill project number 200. And the other parliament members looking on. Now that, of course, you imagine again, it made headlines all over Scandinavia. You've got to realize that the parliament is about 200 meters away from the royal palace. It was a major scandal. And it was fantastic because it was again a stroke of genius. And she had not planned it. She was not the smartest of all the Christelita, I say. And she just had done it completely naturally. I have a baby, I breastfeed him, so I go to parliament, so what? And then suddenly, again, Christine had managed to split the nation. There were people who said, oh, how dare you do that in the parliament? And then you had a great many women who said, hey, sod it. We have fed you milk, so why shouldn't we do it in parliament? What can you say to that? You never drank milk when you were a baby? Fabulous trick. Really fabulous trick. So that again helped because Christiania was seen as a place funny, a giving place, a good place, even though, and people often in Denmark decided to be fair by deciding, okay, on one side, you have the activist, and indeed that was the major political fault line in Christiania, the activist, the people with a more political mind, and the hash pushers. The hash pushers are the bad ones, and the activists are the good ones. On that, one day, I was a witness to an extraordinary event, again, which shows what happens when you start having a society which begins to look like an anarchistic society. The major political fault line was activists, hash pushers. The numbers were the same, about 150 activists and 150 hash pushers. I was among the activists, and I was very often fighting hard against the pushers, thinking they were real bastards. They had big dogs all over the place. They were violent. They had an aesthetic taste which was absolutely the pit. Then one day came a scandal. How can you have a scandal in a place which is more or less run on anarchistic values and techniques? Here goes. A man wrote, and he was an activist, a man wrote a book analyzing Christianite society. And as he was a Marxist, you know what he said? He said, look, how funny, all the activists come from bourgeois families, middle class families, and that was true. And how funny, most of the hash pushers come from working class families, And that was true as well. And it was true that the two segments completely misunderstood each other. Because the activists were, me for example, again, I was thinking, how dare you have all those big unleashed dogs? I'm sorry, you're freaking me out, you're scaring me. Why are you scaring me with, you know, 100 dogs in that place? And why do you have knives all over the place? And why do you always have this, you know, very macho attitude of my muscle first, and who are you if you want to speak with me, punch me in the face first? That was, of course, I think I was entitled to feel like it. But of course, from their side, they said, who are you to always talk to us, not with us? Always use the weapons of intellectual analysis that you master very well, because you are bourgeois people who have been trained into that. We are working class kids. We got nothing of that. And you are always full of contempt for us. Hey, that wasn't such a bad argument. But there you get an amazing twist. Frankly, when the book came out, I read it, and the guy had a point. I hated it, but the guy had a point. You know, he really, you know, showed us our own shit. You know who threw him out of Christiania? The pushers. Why? And here, it shows that the human element gets real weird. In his book, at some point, there was a description of the pusher in the eye of the activist. And it was, of course, a caricature. Dirty, stupid, vulgar, farting all over the place, pissing all over the place, drunk with beer all the time. But that was a caricature, and clearly it was ironical, and the guy clearly stated this is how activists see pushers. But there was a very, very, very strange man in the ranks of the pushers. He was not a pusher himself, but he was always on their side. And he was called, actually he had a strange nickname, Pelle was his name, the flea in the fur. You know, you buy a nice fur coat, but it's full of fleas. What's the point? Alors, the flea in the fur coat is a traditional Danish expression to mean the booger who's always, you know, sowing discord among everyone. You know, the guy who always makes sure that people fight together. And that guy, who was very literate, very well educated, very smart, photocopied only those 10 lines, and he distributed to all the pushers. And of course, you realize that none of the pushers read the book from the activists, because it was written in Marxistic gobbledygook. You know, with long sociological words like this to show, hey, I've had, you know, 5 years of schooling at a sociological university. It was terribly written. It was right, I think, in the ideas, but terribly written. So none of them read it. And they said, look, this is what the activists think of you, and especially this is what this activist thinks of you. And the guy was given 5 hours to leave. And he left. Because this time it was the big bad pushers with the big bad dogs who really meant to really, really, you know, beat him if he didn't go in 5 hours. That really left a very bitter taste in my mouth. And I realized, you know, how quickly crowds and groups can turn real fast if you're not real, real careful. And where it got disgusting, and here I was, the very same gay man who had given me hospitality in exchange for a little sympathy. Those very gay men put up a poster saying, be happy, Christiania, so-and-so is leaving. And there again, I was completely nonplussed. Because the pushers had not read the book. But my gay friends, they had read the book. And here again, I didn't understand. I couldn't understand they wanted to be on the side of the pushers. That I couldn't understand. But since they had read the book, that they did not understand that this guy was also on the side of the pushers, that blew my mind. And that shows that whenever but I'm sure you all know it in your own groups, etc., that it's not just because we don't have bosses and we don't have hierarchies, that sometimes we don't get really shitted in our minds and don't get really warped and make obviously clearly the wrong decision. But at any rate, the decision was taken. It has remained a thorn in the side of Christiania. Later, it was decided that if he wanted to come back, he could come back. He never came back, of course. That is perfectly understandable. But life went on. And then came a second very big difficulty. By the way, I've been hogging speech since the beginning, and no questions so far.
Yeah, that would be wonderful if you have questions. And ask them and have a conversation.
As more environmental awareness developed in the counterculture, did Christiania attempt solar energy or permaculture, organic gardening?
Alors,
to what extent are they sustainable?
Enormously. Again, the mix in the beginning was very varied. You had oodles of hippies, and out of the hippies came a great deal of green awareness. And anyway, everybody else was agreeing with this. By the way, this was precisely a beef we activists had with the pushers. They often did stuff which was definitely not very nice from an environmental point of view. But otherwise, they are super, 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 super environmentally aware. Again, in my book, I have a long description, for example, of one of the largest work collectives of Christiania called the Green Hall. Now, what is the Green Hall? It's the people who recycle everything. It's the people who first have trucks and tractors who pick up all the trash from all the place and recycle it. They have a compost heap, they do this, they do that, I mean, everything. Then they do something else. Christiania is in Denmark. It's freaking cold. You need, heating materials. So what these guys from the Green Hall do is they go and buy gas, not the glue, 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 but the gas. Yes. For the gas heaters, about all the stuff you need to heat, especially, for example, what they call briquette, little bricks, you buy them from the companies who sow wood chips, compressed, very good for heat. And they did something which fascinated me no end. They contracted with demolition contractors. They're going to demolish a building. They contract to buy all the doors, all the windows, all the plumbing, etc. And they stored that in their green hall, which was an enormous building. It was fascinating. 200 white water closets, 200 a certain type of piping, then another type of piping, then a third type of piping, then different types of wood, then maybe 500 different windows, then 100 doors. Fascinating place where you could buy the stuff. And they also had the bicycle heap. Well, the bicycle heap was very simple. Copenhagen is flat, Denmark is flat, everybody bicycles. So you have thousands of discarded bicycles, and the guy, same thing, went through the town, picked up all bicycles, and you could throw your own old bicycle onto that heap. And personally, in the 4 years I lived there, I never paid more than about $50 for a bicycle, because I had a friend who was very handy with his hands. So I would give him $50, and he would go on the bicycle heap. He made me absolutely disgusting monsters. That was so ugly, nobody ever stole them from me. That was really fine. So definitely the place is at the forefront of environmental fighting there. And, Adriana, I'm sorry, I'm going to repeat myself. Again, I'm going to confess something. I was a vegetarian cook. No, you don't get the point. I was a terrible vegetarian cook. I quickly got promoted to waiter. I was so good. After a week, they told me, "Look, Jean-Manuel, your skills lie in human relations." Thank you, guys. Thank you. Off I went. This was a wonderful place, by the way. It was called the Morning Place, Morgenstedet. It was one of the cutest restaurants in Christiania. It was a collective like all others, where everybody would get the same amount of money. The same amount of money per hour. So whether you were cook or low waiter, you got the same amount of money. Theoretically, you were supposed to do a bit of everything. But in cases of clear incompetence, as in mine, or in cases of clear competence, in the case of the French woman who vainly tried to teach me the fine art of cooking, She was mostly the cook. I was mostly the waiter. But for many other people, they did one role or the other role. It was all together. The hour, the salary per hour was the same within the collective. And we tried in Christiania to have what we call the Christiania salary. That is that we try to say, okay, let's try to have the same hourly salary in all the collectives. Not all collectives went with that, but we respected that. Most collectives went with it. It was a very decent salary. About, in those days, $7 an hour. When you take into account that rent, I'm going to go into that later, but that you didn't pay officially rent, that we were most of all very young, that nobody cared about how you were dressed, that you recycled a great deal of the stuff you used, being paid $7 an hour was ample money. The food was very cheap. By the way, the best bread I've eaten in my life, I've eaten in Christiania. They made absolutely... And by the way, you know what? The guy who really started the good bread of Christiania, he was from the Foreign Legion. Yeah, the French Foreign Legion. That's so strange, you know, going from French Foreign Legion to Christiania, but he really made good bread. You've got to see the nice sides of people. And so that was the idea to try to have this common salary. So some people, for example, belong to several collectives. Some people belong only to one collective. And it was also interesting to see what were the power relations within one collective. Usually what happened is that very often you had one or two persons who were not really the bosses, but they were persons with more weight than the others. But why? Because they were there every day. Eventually they had started the thing. They came there every day. They knew the place. So it was clear that then they had more weight. But once again, officially, as long as you were accepted by the collective, then your voice had as much weight as that of the others. And once again, no votes. The idea was very simple. I'm sure you're very familiar with the concept. The tyranny of the vote is a tyranny just like all the others. It's not because there's 51% in favor of this and 49% that then the 49% should shut up. And this is why decisions were taken by consensus. I'm sure you're very familiar, all of you, with meetings and how they go. And again, I have written wonderful descriptions of meetings into this book, but I'm sure they would be familiar to you. Drunks, dogs, crazy people, people hogging the microphone, people fighting, egos in competition. I mean, you know the whole thing. Still, my argument with non-anarchists has always been the same. I tell them, you say an anarchistic type of meeting is a pain in the neck. Yes. But how much of a pain in the neck is a fucking boss who breathes down your neck? Frankly, I'd rather have, you know, long, stupid meetings where you want to slap everybody in the face. But once the meeting is done, everybody loves one another, then have a fucking boss whom you hate all day long. I'm sure here that probably everybody must agree with me. Yes, I'm listening.
Okay. I apologize, I came late, so I'm not sure if you said anything about this, but were there education collectives? And
yes.
They addressed that.
Alors, because indeed, of course, the population of Christiania being very young in the beginning, in the 20s and the 30s, they quickly had children. And, of course, they quickly decided that they had to try to raise them on their own. So the very first thing which got into existence was a kindergarten. Nothing revolutionary into this kindergarten. It was a kindergarten just like all other kindergartens, but it was run by Christianity. Basically, the parents had gotten together. Okay, you do Monday afternoon, I do Wednesday morning, I do book. And same thing, salary. Alors, since they didn't want to be too unfair on those who had children, the salaries of the kindergarten were paid out of the collective fund of Christiania. Alors, what was that collective fund? Alors, here we go into the problem of the rent. I'm sorry, I seem to veer, but it's to explain. Quickly, it was decided that since nobody officially paid rent, this was an occupied building, well, set of building, still, we had an image problem. That the common Dane, whose support we sought, said, you boogers, you sit on prime real estate in the middle of the capital and you don't pay a cent. The reasoning was this. First, Christiania is on army ministry land. Fuck the army. We're not going to pay rent to the army. But then the governor said, you are on army ministry land, you've got to pay to the army ministry. Fuck you, fuck you. So we did pay rent. The rent went into a bank account And it was said, the day you make us pay to somebody else than the army ministry, we shall give you the money in that bank account. And as far as I am aware, the interest went into that common fund. The second thing, the second source for the common fund was, activists said, let's pay a rent to ourselves. Let's pay the Christiania rent. That is going to be our common fund, which is going to pay for the kindergarten, for the teenagers club, for the little elementary school, kind of elementary school they had, for the green hall, you know, when they have a shortfall, for all the activities that cost money and don't bring money in. And that collective fund is administered by its own special meeting called the economy meeting. Now, once again, it's run on anarchistic lines. Anybody can become a member of the economy meeting. You just show up. Very few people want to do that because it's boring like hell, you know. And if you don't understand what has gone on in the last 3 years, you don't understand shit about it. So few people want to do it, which means that they do get a little power. But after all, they only get power just because the others don't want to take the power from them. And that economy meeting decides what is done with the collective fund. But any general assembly could overrule what the economy meeting has decided. Personally, did I pay my Christiania rent always on time? Could you please ask another question? But I should have. And most people did. Not always fully regularly, but most people did. It is something which has more or less worked. I'm sorry, just before I take your question. One very important thing about Christiania children. I talked with teachers of the neighboring schools, because when they get into high school, then Christiania doesn't have the resources, so the kids are sent to normal schools. The teachers from the neighboring schools love Christiania kids. They love them. Why? They're mature. Why? Because there's no separation between kids and grown-ups. The kids are welcome everywhere in Christiania. They can go. Of course, it doesn't mean that they can take a machine just the moment they want it and do whatever they want with it. But they can come to the meeting of the collective that has the machines. Say, I would like to try your stuff. Could you teach me? No problem. You do this, you don't do that. If you do this, your finger is going to be cut. If you do that, you know, the hammer is going to break your head. But if you do that, you're going to do what we want you to do. Bingo. And in Christiania, there is something which I have only felt in our environments, in anarchistic environments. Full respect for one another. You can be a drunk. You can be a fool. You can be an eccentric. You can be weird according to the categories of the outside world. You can be a perfectly normal person. You can be 70 years old. You can be 15 years old. Doesn't matter. Full respect. And that is an amazing feeling. And I'm sure you feel it eventually among our circles. But then you immediately go into the normal society where, poops, that disappears. But in Christiania, you live it 24/7. It's every day. You walk the streets, and everybody is your equal. That's a fabulous feeling. Let me give you my take on this. I was at school. I was 2 years younger than my schoolmates. I was very brilliant. But I was also 2 years younger. And I was always in boys' schools. 2 years younger in a boys' school, forget it. You're the wimp. You're the coward. You're the teacher's pet, etc. It's just awful. I had a hell of a time. But in Christiania, who cared? I didn't know how to do this. Well, you can learn if you want to. If you don't want to learn, too bad. It's your problem. No problem. You're not more despicable for that. You're gifted to do that, to do the press releases. Fine, you do it. That does not make you superior, nor does it make you inferior. As long as you know, do it in a way that we like, fine. It was extremely enthusing to feel that permanent, constant equality. However, there's a snag. We felt equal. But how did we feel with the outside people? Because in Christiania, again, you have then something special. It's in the center of a large Western metropolis. Christiania is a zoo. People come to gawk and gape Oh, wow, look. Look at that guy. Look at my gay friends, you know, the weirdos, the eccentrics, the trunks, the this and that. You know, we were the zoo. So the reaction became opposite. Outside people were derided with one word, turista, tourist. And there was clear contempt in that. I several times tried to point out to other Christianites that this was really nasty, that we shouldn't use that word because it just goes against our principles. But it came very automatically. So here I was saddened by the fact that you buy equality apparently at the price of contempt. I don't know whether if the whole world was an anarchistic society, who we would, you know, have our contempt against. I have no idea. But maybe that... I'm sorry. You asked the question. Did I answer your question?
I'm going back to the man who wrote the book. Do you feel like the queer men who ousted him, do you feel like they were misunderstanding his point, or do you feel like they were just using the propaganda for their own means to oust him?
I never understood. Okay. First, two things. Here, this is simply a personal thing. By the time this happened, I was not interested in gay men anymore, sexually speaking. They resented that. You know, that was, oh boy, in fact he's gay, but he doesn't dare really be gay anymore. To me it was just I had made an experience which had been very nice and interesting. I had, gone back to heterosexuality, and to me, you know, period, no problem. From my side, no hard feelings. From their side, hard feelings, which made it that I didn't really dare go and ask, why are you doing that? Then also, it's not all the gays. And clearly, by the way, it was really clear to me that the gays who still were friendly with me were not happy with the ousting of that man, whereas the gay who had the grudge against me also were the ones who had the grudge against that man. But frankly, I still don't understand. This puzzled me. This I never understood. Yes.
Are you done with that? Okay.
Yeah.
I want to jump ahead to the aging of Christianity.
Yeah.
How? I mean, you were there then, but now it's aging.
Alors,
it's still full. So how's that work?
It's a very complicated question for me to answer, for the very simple reason that I haven't gone back to Christiania for the last, can't remember, 10, 12, 13, 14 years. I can't remember, but a long time. There's a personal psychological reason, which is very simple. Coming back to Christiania proper, I would feel like going back in my psychological mindset of being young. I'm very happy at being hopefully mature. and I don't want to be young anymore. So I don't want to go back to Christiania. Otherwise, I love the place still. I mean, if the police threatens it, I'll go in a train and I'll go fight with them. But I don't want to be there. Second, I strongly beware of what anybody who is not a Christian it says about Christiania. I've seen too many distortions, eventually well-meaning distortions. When somebody who is not living in Christiania tells me something about Christiania, I just don't believe that person. Whether it's positive or negative, I just don't believe it, period. One thing is clear. Again, there's the hardcore of Christianity who has indeed aged. Now there are people who are 60 years old. I think it is now that Christiania deserves to be, in my eyes, admired. My take on this is very simple. It's very easy to be an anarchist when you're 20 years old. What do you have to lose? Plus, you are in still full rebellious mood and fuck the system. Yeah, sure. Easy. Being an anarchist at 60 years old is a completely different ballgame. Because when you are 40, 50, 60, suddenly what you want, because many other pleasures of life are disappearing, you want social recognition. Because that's the one pleasure that keeps increasing at that age. Being an anarchist, as you well know, is not the best path towards social recognition, let's put it mildly. So I think personally that it's very good. Of course, people can say they are sitting on fabulous real estate. There's no way in hell they are going to release it. And I perfectly understand that. I mean, if you went into the place, you would understand. You know, living, again, suppose people who would live in New York with a lake, small houses. I mean, this would be worth millions of dollars in New York, it would be worth millions of crowns in Copenhagen. Still, they have successfully resisted all temptation to create a hierarchical structure. There are still no bosses. They are still fucking the government brilliantly. Personally, my hat off to them. But I don't know the mood. I don't know the mood. I don't think he's here today, but I don't know him. There's a guy called Chuck, who's a friend of Adriana, who just went there because of my book, apparently, 2 weeks ago. He was very happy. But he also said, oh, you know, one thing hasn't changed. The police is still coming every week and beating everybody up. But the simple fact that it's still on, to me, is the important thing. And again, when I hear it constantly, oh, it's not as it was in the beginning. But when I first came in 1976, oh, it's not like in the beginning. You know it. You know, whenever you have all these alternative scenes, it's never like it was in the beginning. You know, you've got guys, you know, with white hair who tell you, phew, the punk scene, you should have seen the hippies in 68. And of course, when there were hippies in 68, you had the guys with the white hair who said, phew, you should have seen the rock and roll with Elvis, you know. Same game. Did I answer your question? Sorry.
I was just wondering, right before you started taking questions, seemed like you were about to tell about some other controversy or scandal or something.
Yes, yes, yes. And not the scandal. No, but something which was a major pain in the neck, which played a role in my leaving Christiania. Hells Angels. Alors, you have competing gangs, and one gang settled in Christiania. By the way, they were called Bullshit. An apt name I never saw. And of course, they were Hell's Angels. Violence, rapist, dealing in guns, machine guns. They were caught once with 21 Kalashnikovs. Alors, there were a damper on everything, on every feast. You would have a nice... I have never seen in my life parties as those that they were in Christiania. They were magical. I mean, I use the word magical. Everybody loving one another, great ideas, fantastic aesthetics, good music, perfect. In they would come, boom. 15 minutes after they would come, somebody would lie bleeding. You understand the game. How do you throw those bastards out? Because there the problem is very simple. You've got to be the first. You know, in such a society where everything is open, you have to make a note saying, well, me, Jean-Manuel, I say, what about throwing the bastards out? And of course, what you fear is that the minute later, those guys are knocking on your door, and you're dead meat. And here, I was of two minds because I do think there was a lot of cowardice in dealing with them, which I understand fully because, again, I'm a coward myself, and I understand that. We finally decided to do something, and it was a scene I will never forget. ₹150 grave Christians, me one of them, together. You see how we are usually in an anarchistic demonstration. But this day, everybody was like this. One again, the other. We were scared shitless. And we were all completely. The 150 guys made the circle smaller than this room because we were scared shitless. And then the guys come down and I'm starting to joke, but still, you could feel that they were not that fully at their ease either. It was really, I wish somebody could have been there. They circled us like sharks. And exactly the same, you know, the tactic of the school of lions who want to take the weak one, you know, trying to see who we could bounce on or provoke. You. And, you know, they were clearly waiting this, but fortunately we were so scared. All together. Still, it didn't really work. It conveyed to them our displeasure, but they didn't give a fuck about our displeasure. And once again, we used our brains. And what were our brains? Well, you know, these guys, they're so fucked up, the only thing they think about is rivalry. So we simply had other Hells Angels shoot them down. Of course, when I say that, I didn't mean we went to the other Hells Angels and said, you know what, you want a little training practice. Look, it's just that there were apparently some Christianists, I never know who, and I never asked, of course, who were friends with the guys who had the name Hells Angels. And you know that Hells Angels are supposed to run their territory. They shouldn't have competitors. And Bullshit was a competitor. So I think that probably what happened was that regularly tips were given, and one guy was murdered, another guy was murdered, the third guy was murdered, and then one day the police found a murdered body by the Bullshit in the ground of their home, of their house. There I was already gone, and I have heard that then the Christians got nuts, and they got 600 people, and they threw them out, but then they were already weakened, and they knew that, you know, their time was coming. By the way, I have seen a picture of the burial of one of them. Imagine the Protestant pastor, you know, with the big white thing around his neck, with a big black dress, and 15 Hells Angels in all their finery, with their colors which show a bull shitting on a water closet. And the graves have those colors of a bull shitting on the water closet with the water closet in gold leaf. I'm not exaggerating. You know, the human mind is an interesting tool. So this is what was really, to me, something where we should have acted earlier. But then on the other hand, maybe if we had acted earlier, there would have been death on our side. And here I have the sign that I have talked way too long. Before we leave, there's one thing, which is one of the main reasons why I flew from France exclusively to come to speak here, is I want that fucking book to be translated in English. Really, those of you who speak French, it's there. If you can speak with publishers, I'm very serious. I really would like to have it translated in English. The difficulty is this. I think I write a pretty good English, but still, I write the way a Frenchman speaks. And it's difficult French. It's not easy to translate. I've worked years and years and years and years on it. It's not easy to translate, and it would demand that we find a really, really, really good translator. It's a book that will not be translated in 2 months. It's a year's work. So this is one of the reasons why it has not been translated into any language so far. But if you know somebody, please do it. Madam.
Did you speak to all the publishers upstairs? Obviously,
not all of them, because I don't know any of them. Again, I'm straight from France right now. I mean, I arrived yesterday. Adriana, fortunately, introduced me to some of them. But I think also if you have heard the thing, you may... Again, my name is Jean-Manuel Tremont. If you want my... business card. Say that again. Yes, indeed. I have sent one copy to Autonomedia. I haven't received yet an email so far. They might be scared by the difficulty of translating it. Because really, it is a difficult book to translate. Absolutely. But I'll gladly give out my my card to anyone who might be interested.
I speak French, but I can get it.
Say that again. Oh, you on the internet, the anarchistic publisher who does it will send it to you. It's very easy. You can see the book in here. And incidentally, a book you will not find because it's out of print is this beautiful one with all the posters of Christiania. It's absolutely gorgeous. The guys made posters which are, to my mind, world-class art. Look at that, for example. Really fabulous. It's a fabulous breeding ground for creativity. I mean, clearly, when we anarchists say that if there was an anarchistic society, people would become artists in a far higher degree, I mean, Christiania proves it, period.
This talk was wonderful. You should be a one-man act on Broadway. I mean, you're a storyteller. I mean,
it's my job as well. I'm,
Are you giving this anywhere else? I wanted to videotape this later if I knew that it was happening.
I could. I mean, this I would gladly do it also because I think, you know, there should be more stuff about Christiania made. And I'm a tour guide. I'm a museum and tour guide. And you know where I first did it? In Christiania.